Call this meeting of Senate Transportation to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:02 p.m. on Thursday, February 4th, 2016. We're in the Butrovich Room 205. The record show we have a quorum. Committee members present are Vice Chair Bishop, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Stedman, Senator Egan, and myself, Senator Maticki. I don't see any other senators or reps. I want to recognize my committee staff, Lynn Smith, and Carrie Cooperwriter from Senate Records, and Cody Grusendorf from LAO. Thanks for being here. Everyone, please turn off your cell phone. This morning is to first give our first hearing on Senate Bill 92, Mandatory Use of Headlights, sponsored by Senator Stedman. It's not my intent to pass this bill out of committee today, but we're also going to be having our second hearing today on Senate Bill 132, Electronic Tax Returns and Motor Fuel Tax, requested by the governor. Senator Stedman and Randy, please join us at the table, introduce yourself for the record, and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bert Stedman, Senator for most of Southeast, south of the channel here, District R. What we have today is before the committee, Senate Bill 92. It's a pretty simple, straightforward bill, but there's quite a backstory to it, and the backstory is actually what is driving this particular statute. The essence of the bill is the essence of the issue is a requirement to have headlights on at all time on the roads within, which was initially, I think, when this was put in Southeast. Now it's South Coast region as DOT changed it. But over the years, there's been several proposals brought to the legislature to require headlights on at all times, and the legislature has decided not to do that by taking no action on these bills. In 2009, Senate Bill 73, and there's a House Bill 181, and 2014, Senate Bill 115. And what had happened then was there was a regulatory decision made by DOT to require headlights on in the Southeast Islands area, or throughout Southeast, and it caught our attention in our office because our phone started ringing. We didn't have any real advance notice on this, and our communities got very concerned. If this was a statewide regulation, including everybody, rather than just a particular area of the state, that would be one thing, but this is a targeted area, is my understanding, in Southeast region. It's not supported much by most of the public, and when we asked for an analysis of accidents throughout Alaska, the region, which would include Ketchikan and Sitka, would have virtually minimal traffic deaths. We are not, as you all know, a high highway or road mile area. We don't have excessive speeds within our area. We have no freeways to speak of. So it doesn't really fit our area. Unlike Central, with the mass majority of the population, and Northern, with the large city of Fairbanks. So there's some concern there, but for more of a technical drive-through on this particular issue, I'll have my trusty aide sitting next to me and walk through some of the finer points of the bill. But I just want to point out that the underlying essence of this bill is when the legislature takes affirmative action not to do something, an agency by regulation imposes it over the will of the legislature. That becomes a concern of me, or of mine, and it should be a concern of of all of the elected officials, and this just happens to be the subject at hand, and there is a concern here. We, you know, spend a lot of time on government overreach and point to Washington, D.C., but we want to make sure our overreach issues don't reside in our backyard. And with that, I'd like my trusty aide to give a few finer points to it.
Chairman Chickey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Randy Ruaro, staff to Senator Stedman. To follow up to the senator's comments, the bill really has just the two sections. They're both intended and advised by Ledge Legal as the way to pull this specific policy issue back to the legislature from a otherwise very broad, generic grant of authority to the agencies to accomplish this by regulation. So we're passage of the bill would just pull back this one piece, the 24/7 headlight rule, back to the legislature. The other existing headlight rules for when timing wise when you have to use headlights and if the conditions require use of headlights would remain in place. Just a quick follow-up on the science of headlights on at all times. Certainly not an expert, but with some research, it appears that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has taken a look at the issue numerous occasions, and on, I think it was 2008 and 2009, they found that the evidence was equivocal as to the benefit of the daytime headlights. And in one other report, they found that daytime headlights seem to actually increase involvement in two-car passenger vehicle fatal and all crashes. And those are just some points. I think the science is probably debatable. If you weighed up the reports, you'd probably get more on the scale that lean towards a safety benefit. But there is some findings to the contrary.
Let me just add a couple things. Are you done?
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah, just on the, you know, the cost, there's federal money involved here, which I'm sure the department could speak to much better than me. But it still takes money. It takes man hours to put up signs and maintain them. We're trying to hold back our budgetary growth. We're trying to help the department, DOT, in, you know, the most critical areas around the state as we work through the budgetary challenges we have in front of us. And it's just little things like this that come back and agitate you as an elected official. If I felt as a senator for the area that we had safety corridor issues, we had high death ratios on our highways, we had speeding issues on our highways, I'd be a little more understandable, possibly. But when I look at the death statistics here, in 2010, 52 people died, one in my area, and one in Juneau, that comprises all of Southeast. In 2011, 63 was a total number. There was three in Juneau and none in south of Juneau. 2012, there was 54 deaths. There was one in one of my communities. One in Juneau. 12 and 13, there was what, 0-0 and zero, and 49 statewide. The math doesn't work. I think we should, if we're going to concentrate on safety issues, there's other things we can do. And I am concerned about, you know, where this concept came from, how it was input into the department, how one region of the department, to my understanding, took action on it. The other ones opted out. And the region that took action on it doesn't have the the fatalities and the issues behind it that other areas of the state do. So with that, Mr. Chairman, it's a simple bill. Just takes the authority back to the legislature. We have very little authority, quite frankly, relative to the other states compared to the executive branch. And I'm not inclined to give up any of our authority, quite frankly.
Okay, questions for the sponsor? Senator Dunleavy.
Mr. Chair, how would this be handled in the unincorporated areas where there's no boroughs, no cities, and basically the legislature is the assembly for the unincorporated areas? How would this bill impact those areas?
Most of my geographical area is unincorporated. Assuming, you know, Prince of Wales dominates, you know, most of the area. They have their signs on Prince of Wales on the highways there. I don't see any difference. Highways there, Ketchikan or Sitka.
So they'd be removed under this if it's passed?
I'd like to see them removed, yes. I don't want to pay DOT to maintain them, personally. I'd rather see DOT fix a pothole.
Other questions? Senator Bishop.
Is this would be a statewide?
Correct. This bill is statewide.
So is AST going to weigh in on this later? Because yeah, there are safety corridors around the state.
We have several people we're going to talk to.
Okay. Thank you. I'll just hold till then.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, one other thing that why these little things agitate some folks more than others. When I look at the workload of DOT, we're minimally staffed, trying to deal with roads and airports in Southeast. When I look at our troopers, we're minimally staffed. We've got fish and game violations. We've got black tar heroin issues going on in our communities. We have domestic violence. I don't want Department of Public Safety taking away time from dealing with these serious social issues and community issues to be chasing somebody around who didn't turn their headlights on. It's, you know, they're just a more efficient use of state energy.
Thank you. I'm going to bring up the Jeff Jeffers. You can please state your name and position with DOT for the record.
My name is Jeff Jeffers. I'm the State Traffic and Safety Engineer for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Okay, you might want to pull your mic a little closer.
Thank you.
And you have testimony that you've prepared, and then we'll have some questions for you as well.
I do, Senator. with the help of management, I prepared this short statement regarding the Senate Bill 92. The Department of Transportation and Public Facilities neither supports nor opposes Senate Bill 92. The department is prepared to proceed according to our legislature's direction on this issue. Current headlight use regulatory signs were installed in accordance with the existing provisions of 13 AAC 04.010 and were not intended to represent a statewide requirement for daytime headlight use. The department sees value in retaining the current latitude of 13 AAC 04.010 in order to retain the low-cost, site-specific safety countermeasure of daytime headlight use. Studies indicate between 5% and 15% reduction in multi-vehicle crashes during daytime hours for head-on, sideswipe, and angle-type crashes. The department acknowledged the frustration generated by the South Coast Region 2014 Headlight Use Signs Project and adjusted our procedures for erecting these signs. We revised our Alaska Traffic Manual in 2015 to require DOT commissioner approval before erecting headlight use signs. There is only one other regulatory sign in Alaska that requires commissioner approval. The department recognizes any regulatory sign or requirement reduces the public's right to choose how they behave or operate their motor vehicles. But like speed limits and stop signing, we believe the safety benefit and desire to bring Alaskans home at the end of the day, alive and uninjured, is a societal benefit that significantly outweighs the impact on the reduction of the public's rights. And I'm available for any questions.
Questions for Mr. Jeffers?
Senator?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One question for me is, if this were to become law, this no way, no how, does it any? Are we affected by any federal funding that we might or might not get?
Not to my knowledge. We implemented this particular project as a highway safety improvement project, which is federally funded. It's uncertain whether we would have to reimburse the federal agency for their participation in this project. As I said before, we implemented the project in accordance with 13AAC regulation, which has been in place for some time. We did it based on safety data, the analysis, which we consider a systemic process, one that analyzes data looking for highways with similar characteristics for which a safety countermeasure can have benefit, and then apply appropriate and affordable countermeasures over a number of locations. In this case, all these highways are rural two-lane highways. They happen to be in South Coast region. It was not our intent to extend this beyond the rural segments or to infringe on the legislature's intent in their choice not to advance bills regarding statewide full-time headlight use.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman?
This is a clarifying point. My understanding is that this federal grant was available for all the regions of Alaska. DOT in Southeast region was the only one that selected to participate. The other ones opted out. Is that correct?
Not quite, sir. It's, excuse me, through the chair. The Highway Safety Improvement Program is a federally funded program. States are mandated to manage these funds and to improve spot locations as well as system-wide improvements for enhancing safety. Reducing and eliminating fatal and major injuries is our goal. The funding, which comes to the headquarters, is distributed to the regions based on their nominations of projects. So there was, in that year, I suppose, something on the order of $30-some million of funding that was distributed around the state. Of this project, about $100,000 or less was involved in the erection of these signs. So it was a small part. Had this funding not been used for this particular signing project, it would have been used elsewhere in the state.
Follow up?
Well, we've had a change of commissioners. It's unfortunate because the, in certain degrees, but the conversation I had with the then commissioner, and this is going on, that it was they didn't know about it, and neither did his boss know about it until it was basically done, and their phone was ringing. So that's a issue that other branch of government has to deal with as far as information flow. But still, I understand the concern of the highway desks and in the safety corridors, because we've had numerous hearings and funding requests and have taken affirmative action throughout the rail belt trying to deal with the heavy traffic in the highway desks that the rail belt has. It's not a rural issue, quite frankly. I've never heard, at least I can't recall, any hearings over the years with safety corridor issues in Southeast Alaska. The biggest highway we have is the Egan Highway, sitting out here in Juneau. The rest of them, as we've mentioned, is basically two lanes with 35 to 45 mile an hour speed limits. It's, you know, it doesn't fit the region. I think it fit a grant from Uncle Sam, and there's no question that the 13AAC, that, you know, that they had the authority to do something like this. I don't question that. I mean, I've looked at the regs and the, you know, applicable statutes. But my concern, again, comes back to the umbrella issue of who's setting the policy, the agencies or the elected officials in the legislature.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions. Was this a net positive or negative to the general fund for this grant? Is it costing the state a dime for any of this signage and maintenance?
Yes, sir. The state cost for this project was about $2,000, a little more than $2,000. That's because of the matching funds that are applied to federal funding of different types.
And just another question, Mr. Jeffers, is what other kinds of decisions does the Department of Transportation make on making our highway safer that the legislature does not weigh in on? Do we try to legislate speed limits or striping or signage or?
No, sir. The department is given latitude in the regulations or perhaps the statute to implement traffic control devices around the state highway system to improve safety and to control and manage traffic. We routinely install traffic signals, alter their operation, mark pavement, install signs, increase and decrease speed limits in accordance with the needs of the traveling public. So this is one of the elements that we see as a tool in our toolbox. And when it comes to cross-centerline crashes, rural two-lane highways, basically there's runoff the road and angle crashes and head-ons, those types of issues. We have a limited quiver, if you will, of options for dealing with things like this. The price tag increases rapidly, but you know, a short list includes, you know, centerline rumble strips, delineation or signing and marking curb warning signs, widening or straightening of roadways, divided highways, where you can't divide, if you can, put in passing lanes or slow vehicle turnouts. Each of these options is a little more invasive and a little more expensive than the option that we chose in this case. It is a relatively low effectiveness countermeasure, given that we expect to see between 5% and 15% crash reduction. But given the cost of this, should we have even one minor injury accident, or prevent one minor injury accident, and we would be, you know, having a net benefit from a cost standpoint. And that's one of the ways that we evaluate where we're going to spend our money, the federally provided funds for the Highway Safety Improvement Program are distributed to projects that are selected based on their benefit cost. And in this case, while it was a relatively low benefit cost project, it was also low net cost, and we hope that the benefit was greater than the cost or the imposition on the public.
Do you have any statistics on the proportion of vehicle accidents for injury versus fatality?
Well, fatalities are a small proportion of the total, as the senator pointed out. And the previous year, we had something on the order of 50 fatal injuries. On the other hand, injury and total crashes is more like 12,000 a year. So fatal injuries are a very rare random event, and they're not the only consideration we use when we're looking at potential countermeasures. The difference between a fatal injury and a major injury or a minor injury might be the age of the occupant, the kind of vehicle they're riding in, obviously the speed they're traveling, a moment, whether they're wearing their seatbelt, you know, a moment in time, whether they strike the passenger door on the rear or T-bone into the driver's side. So those all weigh into whether it's a fatal or injury accident.
So one last question before I go to the state trooper. Do you have analysis available that provides some justification that daylight headlight usage reduces accidents? We heard otherwise earlier. Do you have something you can provide to the committee that might help us understand the benefits?
Well, yes, in the sense that the northern tier countries, not exclusively the United States in itself, but Finland, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, Denmark, Canada, are all embracing and have embraced over the last 35 or 40 years the use of headlights during daytime hours. I'm not certain whether it's mandated that their vehicles be equipped with daylight running lights or whether it's a headlights on kind of circumstance. I'm not aware that they're intending to reverse their position on this. In the beginning, I think when you could see the transition from before to after, that they found there was a net benefit, a positive effect. The one of the reasons that we're interested in Alaska is that we have the low angle sun, the long twilight periods, things of that nature. A lot of these highways that the Southeast project was installed on have a lot of driveways, so entering and leaving traffic is an issue as well. So we're just trying to make the vehicles, I mean, they're all equipped with lights, and they're both for seeing and for being seen. So we're trying to enhance the conspicuity of the vehicles for being seen.
What I joked with the senator just a little tiny bit. I have a vehicle, in fact, all of our vehicles, except for the 1982 Ford plow truck, when I start the vehicle, the lights come on. They must have done that for a reason. And I have offered to provide the senator and install myself an automatic headlight switch for his truck, but he hasn't taken me up on that yet. Was that a concerted effort with the automatic headlight switches? Is that something the industry recognized as a benefit?
The industry has done this on their own, I think, as a safety measure. There was an effort at one point to legislate that, which was, I think, denied.
Mm-hmm.
But my Chevy headlights come on automatically, but I try to turn them on in any car I drive.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Yes?
Hey, briefly. You touched on it earlier, just a few minutes ago. I'm looking at this 1.5 hour before and after. Do you think that's long enough, or it could be an hour before and an hour after, because you mentioned on the horizon, the sun is lower on the horizon here, and et cetera, et cetera. And I've always been taught and read and trained that the most dangerous time to fly an airplane or drive a car is at sunrise and at sunset, because your depth perception is skewed. So, you know, I'm just asking if you've got a professional opinion. In air and on the side of safety, if an hour before or an hour behind would be better. And you don't have to answer that now.
Well, I can do some research if you like. I actually will notice, though, that the requirement is actually 1.5 hour after sunset. So I'm not sure whether these guys were duck hunters or what, but they the half hour before and after, I assume somebody somewhere has done an analysis, but I will try to find out more about that.
Okay, other questions for Mr. Jeffers? All right, we're gonna go to a couple of public testimonies, and then we'll come back to the troopers and any final questions. So we have for testimony, we have I'm going to open public testimony. Mayor Watson, are you there? Please feel free to provide your public testimony.
Okay, well, Chair and committee members, thank you for allowing me to testify. I'm the mayor of the city of Craig. I've lived on Prince Wales Island 42 years. I am the general manager of the Inter-Island Ferry Authority, and I'm pretty familiar with the area. And we can go back to when this all began. You know, I was flabbergasted to find out without any warning that an employee of DOT from the safety of his desk had decided that we all had to drive with our headlights on. And he did not come to our area and take a look at what was going on. He did not provide any public process. I called the guy and talked to him several times, and he basically told me that there's nothing that you can do about this, and he has told the legislature the same thing. He even put it in writing. Now, I have a real problem with that, being a community leader, being an elected official, but there are other things here. You know, Prince of Wales Island, there are two main causes of traffic accidents on this island, and it has to do with speeding, you know, either going faster than the speed limit or faster than the conditions permit, and driving impaired. And neither of these has anything to do with driving with your headlights on in the daytime. I asked our police chief. He did not believe that it was necessary here. I asked the troopers on the island. They did not believe it was necessary. I asked a deputy commissioner of public safety, and he said had DOT come to them first, they would have suggested that this was not necessary on Prince of Wales Island. So I have a real problem with this whole process, and somebody in DOT that can sit there and legislate on its own, and particularly when the legislature has not passed bills that would allow this very thing or make this very thing in law. So I'm pretty angry about it. I think it's dumb. These roads on this island, they go through our communities. And for example, in Craig, you got soccer mom can get up in the morning, grab her kid, and head for the high school. And if by the time she gets halfway through town, she doesn't notice the sign that says headlights on from here on, by the time she gets to the high school, she is illegal. Kalak has a similar problem that we do, you know, right in the middle of town. And I believe that there should have been a public process. You know, we have city councils for a reason, and I think that that reason should be used. I don't think DOT should go off on their own and do things like this. And it just seemed to be the nature of what was happening at that particular time, and I hope that you guys will consider passing this. I think it's ridiculous. You know, I'm not saying that there are places on this in this state where it doesn't have a great meaning. But here, you know, we have a real problem with it. And, you know, we don't need laws here that don't have a good backup behind them. And just on that note, I just left California. They passed 800 laws last year down there. You know, we don't need to be them. You know, I hope you guys give this some serious consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Watson. Next, we have Brian Lynch from Petersburg.
Yeah, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I want to actually speak against SB 92, or actually kind of speak in favor of a daylight or 24-hour headlight use. I really get that, you know, this really does appear to be government overreach, and I really get and understand Senator Stedman's consternation with it, so I really do. For me, though, this is really a safety issue. I live on Mickoff Highway, excuse me, here in town, and have for about 30 years. And we have a very misleading curve real close to us. And when I leave our driveway. There's been many times where I've had vehicles all of a sudden, if you will, just appear on my rear end, and a couple of times it's been a fully loaded dump truck. And without the headlights on, sometimes you don't really see them, even though they're not exceeding the speed limit. But now, with this headlight regulation, I'll catch them actually sometimes before I actually see the vehicle. And so, for me, this is definitely a safety issue. There are other places on Mitkoff Highway that are like this, where you have rises that people come over suddenly real close to intersections. As far as the troopers, issuing tickets, I don't think that this is really a high priority for the troopers to ticket people who don't have their headlights on. Probably about the only way that would be an issue is if they thought it was a factor in another incident, like somebody, they might give somebody a ticket if they're also caught speeding, or if it looked like an accident was caused because they didn't have their headlights on. Personally, I drive with my headlights on all the time, no matter where I am in town here. But I'm not as fierce as a wind-driven snow either. I forgot to turn my headlights on out Mitkoff Highway too, so it does happen. I've also thought about petitioning DOT to try to reduce the speed limit on Mitkoff Highway, but this would really, I think, seriously negatively impact Alaska Marine Lines when they're particularly when they're running fish during a big summer season into and away from and out out the road from the processors in town. But anyway, I just wanted to say that I really do support the idea of having headlights on, and whatever you do with this bill, I know I'll keep driving with my headlights on, and I really would encourage other people to do so. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing no one, we'll close public testimony. And we have one last person available for questions. That's David Hansen with the Alaska State Troopers. Mr. Hansen, are you there?
I am, yes.
Okay. Do you have a statement you'd like to make, or are you just there for questions?
Through the chair, I'm just available to answer questions.
Any questions from the committee? I just have one for you. I don't know what your position is with the troopers, but have you dealt much with the statewide Alaska highway safety issues? What is your experience with headlight? Improving the safety of our headlights, improving the safety of our highways during the daytime.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Hansen, and I'm a lieutenant with the Alaska State Troopers. I've been employed with them for a little over 22 years, and in my current position, I am assigned as the lieutenant and deputy commander of the Alaska Bureau of Highway Patrol, which works pretty closely with DOT in collaborating with the highway safety corridors and special events around the state, and just keeping in general the specialty traffic units around the state and special events going. As far as the headlights go, the requirement of headlight use at all times, particularly in the highway safety corridors, has shown to reduce collisions based upon the historical DOT stats that I've reviewed, and is well worth the time spent on patrol doing those doing that type of enforcement. Looking at 13AAC 04-010 subsection C. I pulled some statistics from the last 4 years. So for calendar years 2012 through 2015, all 4 years inclusive, in the safety corridors, the Alaska State Troopers and Wildlife Troopers wrote a total of 200 even citations for that offense, which is basically the requirement for people to drive with their headlights on when the when signage suggests that they should have them on. Using a rough figure of about 10 minutes per traffic stop, that ends up being just a little over 33 hours spent by DPS in a four-year time span. So for us and the safety that it offers, especially during breakup when you've got vehicles basically taking on the same color of the road during breakup, having the headlights on to keep vehicles from blending into the background, in our experience, has been a huge benefit in keeping roads safer.
Okay, just a final question for me. How would you divide that effectiveness with country two-lane roads versus the larger state highways?
To divide the effectiveness, I know that this the concentrated effort that we've been putting on this has been through the safety corridors. I don't have stats available for me on the smaller roads. I actually used to work in Kodiak for a while, for about 3.5 years, so I'm familiar with the types of roads you're talking about where they're all two lanes. I know from personal experience that it's, and from speaking with some troopers, that it is easier to see vehicles oncoming. I don't have statistics available that would suggest the reduction in collisions on those smaller roads. It would take a little research on my part, and I don't have that available at this time.
Okay. Other questions for Lieutenant Hansen? Seeing none, thank you, Lieutenant. Appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much.
I just to finish out here, I don't know, Senator Stedman, if you have any other statements you'd like to make.
Yeah, just quick closing remarks before you. I assume the chairman will set the bill aside for further review. Pretty normal process in the first hearing, so I understand that. Southeast doesn't have any safety corridors that I'm aware of. And then a quick, and I'm not disputing the issues within safety corridors, because we've all worked in this building trying to deal with those for a decade or maybe even longer. There is a cost. This is second of the 3 points I want to make. There is a cost to maintaining those signs. There is, some match money, as we all know, to get federal money. But then after that, we're on the hook. We got to maintain it. I personally would rather see the DOT fixing potholes and doing road maintenance and patching up these signs. The third and final comment, Mr. Chairman, I went through and did a little better count on this grid in front of me. I did not take into Haynesboro initially, which is part of Southeast, but Senator Egan and myself collectively have 10% of the population in the state. As far as deaths on highways from 2010 to 2014, we have 3.8% of the deaths and 10% of the people. It doesn't match the region. It's nice that Uncle Sam wants to send us money, but I think we need to be selective in what monies we take from Uncle Sam, and we need to have the policies made in the legislature where they belong with elected officials, and especially when they have made taken affirmative action at least on three bills the last few years, and there's probably more if I went back further in time to deal with this issue. With that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the committee's indulgence and time spent. And I know we have a lot of waiting issues in the legislature, but there's still these little pesky ones that come up from time to time. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Senator. Any other final comments? I just have one before we move to the next bill, and that is I was small town mayor for 5 years, and I can tell you the Department of Transportation, some of their decisions frustrated me sometimes. When they would put in a safety corridor, or they would change a speed limit for a long stretch of highway, or they would change the striping, or most recently change the thickness of the striping to slow vehicles down on a part of our highway, which really works. I would be very frustrated and eventually would sort of adjust. We went through the headlight thing years ago. In my world, and a lot of the worlds of the folks sitting up here, the headlights all the time is just a reality, and it can be frustrating. I think it takes some adjustment. I think probably the frustration we're hearing has to do with the public process more than the headlight issue, and I would recommend to the department that they provide some outreach to those communities. I think if the signs show up one day, it can be frustrating. So with that, we will hold this bill aside for now. And we now have Senate Bill 132, electronic tax returns and motor fuel tax, back before us. During last week's meeting, there are two issues that the administration was going to provide further information on, and that was the percentage of the current gap between revenue and expenses at airports in Alaska that would be covered by the proposed increase in the taxes on jet fuel and aviation gas. And Senator Steadman also requested more background information on airport costs in his district. We covered some of that in the subcommittee meeting just before this meeting. But I wonder if the DOT can come up and chat with us a little bit about that. Unless you'd rather have revenue, that's your choice.
Happy to attempt to address those.
Certainly. Sure.
Mr. Chair, I'm John Binder, Deputy Commissioner of Aviation, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And I did not fully get the questions you just asked, sir.
Well, if you can remember the conversation we had just a few moments ago, it was really about that, getting it on this record, that there's a gap. And we talked about landing fees. And the Transportation Board, sort of got together and talked about their preference and is supporting the, just a brief at ease here. We're back, the Aviation Advisory Board. There was discussions internal DOT and externally somewhat with the Advisory Board about landing fees to try to sort of bridge this gap on the rural airports. What we were wondering is ultimately of the gap that you have, how much will be filled ultimately for the general fund in this $14 million that's expected to be raised with the aviation fuel tax?
Sure, Mr. Chair. So kind of starting from the top, the general fund subsidy right now that goes to the rural aviation system, which is the 247 airports, not including Anchorage and Fairbanks International, that totals about $39 million. The rural system also generates about $5.7 million, or did in FY15, $5.7 million in revenue based on land rent, leases, those sorts of things. So that brings that number down to around $33 million or so. So subsidy coming to DOT to run the system. Now, separate from that is the aviation fuel tax that the state collects, DOR, that goes directly to the general fund. In FY15, that was about $4.1 million total. The projection, based on FY15 numbers with this fuel tax proposal, would be to bring in approximately $14 million, so around $9.5 to $10 million or so increase. We subtract that, the 39 minus 5.75 that the system brings in, around that 33 number, now minus that other 14 that's projected to be brought in, that leaves a general fund subsidy remaining of approximately $19 to $20 million per year to the rural airport system.
Okay. That includes or subtracts the share to the airports that municipal airports that sell fuel, is that right? That $14 million would be the bottom line to the general fund.
That is correct. Out of that $14 million, Mr. Chair, of that comes in, it'd be approximately $200,000 of that would go back to seven communities that own and operate their own airports.
Okay.
It's part of a revenue sharing program through DOR.
Okay. Other questions for DOT airports before we bring up revenue? Thank you.
Sure.
So now we have Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. So I Well, if you can introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue.
I don't know if you have anything prepared today.
Mr. Chair, no. We went through our prepared testimony at your last meeting, and I believe we provided a written response to some questions to the committee.
You did. We are going to keep public testimony open for one more meeting because we will be putting forward a CS.
Okay.
And the logic of the CS, if this bill should pass the legislature, is I think our job is to convince Alaskans that we're not in the increasing the cost of being Alaskan business. We're not in the tax business, but we have a fiscal gap to work through together. And what you're going to see reflected in the CS is a reduction in that tax should we return to a more normal, whatever that means, price per barrel and have our fiscal gap closed in other revenues. And I think that's an important message to Alaskans, that we hope that some of these measures are temporary in nature. And I think I might convince them that we're not simply interested in growing this government. We're going to continue cutting, and we need to all work together in the meantime.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On behalf of the administration, I would like to say that first, thank you for hearing the bill, considering it, and I think we share many of your same concerns about taxation. I'm not aware of anyone who has suggested that we're taxing people because we want to raise taxes. We're taxing people because we believe at this time we have to have additional funds in order to balance the budget.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Burnett? If not, I think we're going to call ourselves, well, before we adjourn, I want to thank you all for being here.
We've got public testimony.
I did not see any. Ah, we do have one person for public testimony, and I recognize that name, Mr. DeVilbiss. And you will have another opportunity to testify at the next meeting, which is likely when this bill moves from this committee. But Mr. DeVilbiss, please identify yourself for the record and feel free to testify.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Larry DeVilbiss. I'm a farmer up in the Mat-Su Valley. I farm beef cows. And I took out last year's Schedule F, just so I could make sure my memory wasn't bad. But the fuel expense on Schedule F was easily the largest single expense. And, you know, for 3 months out of the year up here, the cows get their own feed. But for 9 months, we have to provide that feed. And that's one thing that puts beef in Alaska at a disadvantage, because we have to feed so much more of the year. And so that fuel factor is pretty big. I spend 50% more on fuel than I do on fertilizer for producing that high moisture hay for the cows. So it does have an impact, and I guess I'm a little bit bothered that it looks like there's some extra paperwork that's required by this amendment requiring electronic filing. And if we want to get the off-road exemption of 12 cents, we've got to apply for that. That is probably equally as ominous to me as the extra charge, because I really don't enjoy all the paperwork. Now, maybe I'm reading something into this that isn't there, but I guess it bothers me that we're reaching into our pockets here before we've really found what is the sustainable level of government up here, and I'm just starting to feel a little bit under attack. So just wanted you to let you know how this impacts my business, and thank you for listening.
Mr. DeVilbiss, if you can please stay on the line for just a moment. We have Jerry Burnett here from Revenue that can help answer. I don't believe there's a change in the filing, but other than the electronic. So, Mr. Burnett?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill does require that taxpayers, and those would be fuel distributors, there's approximately 400 taxpayers that actually file tax returns, to file electronically unless they have an exemption. But it does not change the paperwork requirement for getting the off-road exemption. It changes it from a 6-cent reduction in tax to a 12-cent reduction in tax. So it's the same percentage of tax that you're getting reduced as under current statutes. But the paperwork is exactly the same as it would have been before, except for the numbers.
I hope that answers your question, Mr. DeVilbiss. And feel free to, at the next hearing, if you choose to testify again. We understand your frustration on the reaching into your pockets issue. We're certainly, I belong to a team that feels strongly that significant reductions are still required. We're just trying to manage a gap that is unlikely to go away, even if we are very successful. Thank you. Is there anyone? Senator?
Thank you. Good Chair. Mr. Burnett, just one more time for the record, what is the anticipated revenues from this bill?
Senator Dunleavy, through the Chair, the total anticipated new revenues from this bill is $49 million.
Thank you. And one last question, sorry, follow up. Just for the record, we currently bring in how much?
We bring in right around $40 million right now. So this is more than doubling because the increase in tax rate on aviation fuel, jet fuel is actually much larger than double.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy, for the record. And we have one more to testify, it looks like. So, Mr. Thompson, you're up.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Dave Thompson, Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. The Alaska Trucking Association is a statewide organization that represents the trucking interests from Barrow to Ketchikan. One of the ATA legislative priorities for 2016 is the development of a balanced, durable, long-term fiscal plan utilizing cuts to state government, use of permanent fund earnings, and taxes if required. The subject of the hearing today, the fuel tax increase as proposed in Senate Bill 132, is acceptable to the Alaska Trucking Association within the framework of the long-term fiscal plan. We do believe that action is critical in this legislative session. The Alaska Trucking Association has long supported the fuel tax increase if the funds could be dedicated to transportation needs. We realize that this won't happen in this bill, but feel strongly that we need to help to resolve the fiscal issues by doing our part. Thank you for your time, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Any questions for Mr. Thompson? I have one for you, Mr. Thompson. My understanding is that a letter was forthcoming from the Alaska Trucking Association. You don't have to answer me right now, but if that is your intent, we probably have only one more hearing on this bill before it moves to the next committee.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. We will follow up my testimony with a letter.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Yes, Senator Dunleavy.
Through the Chair, this is to Mr. Burnett again. What exempted categories will it be? What exempted categories of school bus, any categories exempted from this tax?
Chair, Senator Dunleavy, on its face, the exempted category is off-road use. That is construction, off-road, farming, your ATV, whatever, a school bus being probably a private contractor working under contract with a local school district would not necessarily be exempted.
Okay, just for the record. So those costs may be passed on to the school districts, and I just want to make note that we have a pretty large road district that I currently senator for.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we would expect on this type of a tax for the cost to be passed on to the ultimate consumer in one way or another.
Thank you.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes, I would. Those watching at home, I wouldn't infer that a bill is going to, tax bill is going to automatically move from committee. It takes the appropriate votes or support to move it. There may or may not be the votes to move this bill, depending on how it looks in its final form and depending how the debate goes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Question,
Senator Bishop.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett, is the marine tax, fuel tax, still as is in the bill? We're not changing the marine. There's a marine fuel tax for all commercial fishermen that can.
To the chair, Senator Bishop, the marine fuel tax is changing in this bill from 5 cents a gallon to 10 cents a gallon. And that is not dedicated. It is put in a separate. It's accounted for separately, but it's general fund dollars. And yes, it would apply to commercial fishermen. It does not apply to the Alaska Marine Highway System, for example, but it would.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Stedman.
On that note, on the marine fuel, I assume it would include the vessels out of Dutch Harbor, the fishing vessels out of Dutch Harbor, and if so, could we get a rough regional breakdown of fuel consumption in the state? Just out of curiosity, I'm anticipating that a heavy fuel consumption would be located in places like Dutch Harbor. There may be some other ports. It'd just be nice to know where that distribution lies.
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Stedman, we can look at what records we can get. Since we tax at the distributor level, it depends on where that distributor level is, how we can break down that. Although, I believe on Alaska has a local sales tax on fuel that applies to all the fuel that's sold there. So there should be local government tax records that would show the amount of fuel sold there, perhaps.
Senator Dunleavy?
Just a quick one, Mr. Burnett. Will there need to be additional administration put into place to handle the additional tax, or is there an additional overhead that's anticipated?
To the chair, Senator Dunleavy, no additional overhead.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Burnett, please explain the system as it is. It's just simply changing the numbers on the existing form.
Right. To the chair, Mr. Chair, the current system, which is, again, taxed at the distributor level generally, we will simply be changing tax rates. We're not going to be changing any applicability of taxes with this or things. So we will be making changes which will have some cost to our programming and forms, but after that's done, the point of electronic filing actually is to, over time, throughout all of our tax system, make it more efficient and less costly for each dollar that's brought in.
Any other questions? We will get with the department on the schedule for the next meeting. And with that, Senate Transportation is adjourned at 2:06 p.m.